I know you're broken hearted, cause the piece you're hoping for is off the scenes apart.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to We Love Northern podcast from LineUpBoy.com. I'm your host, Robert Rosenthal. My guest tonight, well, I put this up tomorrow, so I should say today. My guest today is Tyler. You know him as Walk-On. You know him as the guy who writes the basketball words that are better than mine. Tyler, welcome to the podcast. How are you this evening?
I'm good.
Today. How are you today? There we go.
It's been too long.
Yes, it has. It really has. When's the last time we did a basketball, like just you and me basketball pod? This year? Have we done it? Did we do preseason?
We did not.
Wow.
We did a post Houston wrap-up podcast in March.
Wow.
Maybe April. And that's been it.
So the last time we did this was a therapy session?
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, let's get into it. If I tell you before the season, after 20 games, we'll be 14-6. How do you feel about that? If I tell you that on November 1st?
Disappointed, because I was higher on this team than most preseason. I think, matter of fact, I know that I had predicted, 24-6 in our preview. And
oh, so we got to go undefeated.
We got to run the table. Okay. So, yeah. And a three seed. That prediction was based on some misguided faith in Sky Clark, which I didn't pass that. I thought he was going to be really good. I just had a thought that this was a kid who was. Yeah, he had the injuries, but I took the other side of the coin of what actually happened. Like, this is a 5-star coming off an injury. Once he gets off the injury, it's like a bargain value pick in baseball. I thought he was going to be really good.
So, like, what Purdue is getting from
Braden Smith
is what you think you thought Sky would provide here?
Yes. I was also counting on a sophomore leap from RJ Melendez at the time, which has not happened.
Yep.
And because you think about, you know, we've kind of, with the exception of a few missed steps, you've pretty much maxed out what you could have possibly expected in the two transfers, really the three transfers. Dane and Matt and TJ Shannon have all been really good, probably better than what you would have expected on the whole.
Yep.
The freshmen have been, I think, a little bit disappointed. I think maybe more from Jaden Epps, but certainly less than Ty Rogers, although he was fantastic last night, and a big zero from Sky Clark. And then obviously RJ not making that leap we expected. And of course, Coleman being mercurial. Is that the right word to use?
That's a good word. I like it.
Mercurial
Coleman Hawkins.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's just, when he is good, we are really good.
Yep.
And when he goes off on his tangents, we'll call them.
Yep.
His sabbaticals, then we're not. So,
all right,
but yeah. So on the whole, I overshot on some things, and my robo computer mega pewter predictions have been pretty spot on for the last 3 years. This year's shaping up to be a big miss. Unless
we run the table, which is not going to happen, but. Mm. Stranger things have happened.
It's going to be 17-3 Purdue, and every other team is going to be 10-10 in the conference. That's kind of where we're settling in.
Yeah,
in Minnesota it'd be the 3-17 to counterbalance Purdue.
Right. All right. So that's probably a good place to start, because when you and I were talking about writing the preview, and I always make sure you do the predictions, the schedule predictions on the preview, because you were right on the last 2-3 years. Let's just go back to those conversations, because as you know, I was a little more cautious with this team. And I don't mean that as a, like, I was closer than you. It was just like,
I'm feeling attacked here.
I'm a roster continuity guy. I am who are you bringing back? And once you have that experience and you get junior leaps and you get sophomores taking a big step forward, and, you know, I have these this, you know, thing in my head. And so as I wrote in the intro to preview, I need to adjust to the transfer portal era, because if it wasn't the transfer portal era, this would just be 2018-19, right? You know, you added a bunch of freshmen. You had four guys back that year. You had, what, Kipper, Aaron, Jordan. You had Trent and DeMonte were the only four returnees. You added a whole bunch of people. You added Feliz as a JUCO. You added Georgie. You added Io. You know, the whole Tevian Jones class, everything else. You added Alan Griffin. But that team went 12-21 because it's just so hard to return only four guys and build a brand new team. So the intro to the preview, I said, okay, I'm just going to have to adjust to this era where instead of this is the Adam Miller and Andre Curbelo team, we did a heart transplant and we brought in Danger, we brought in Meyer, we brought in Shannon, and you instead of developing those upperclassmen leaders, those experienced guys, you just transplant them, plug them in, and go, and we'll see how that goes. Because, you know, if this was if we didn't have those three guys, I would be sitting here predicting 12-21.
Yep.
We did add those three guys, and so we're gonna see how that works out, and, you know, how it works in this transfer portal era. So, you know, because we had those conversations and I was a little more cautious and you were a little more, you know, look, we're getting all these pieces with Melendez and we're getting all this with everybody else and Sky Clark and everything else, you and I were, you know, I was in agreement. I thought this was a tournament team. I just didn't have it 24-6 as you did. So given that, I'm probably more aligned with what I expected to see. But it's also not maybe the way I expected to see it. I also thought the RJ we saw in the Houston game giving us a spark in the second half was going to be this launch point to RJ being like the number two guy behind Shannon. That just hasn't happened.
Nope.
I also, you know, I gave Ty Rogers 4.75 cruises. You know, it's the, I think behind Io, is he the highest I've graded someone? No, I had Adam Miller. I had Adam Miller higher, but I had Adam Miller as a 5 cruise guy. I can't remember. But anyway, you know, I thought Ty Rogers would be that guy, and it's just the offensive stuff. He's there except for shooting the basketball has been an issue and will probably be an issue. And so, you know, that kind of missed on what I expected to see. But, you know, overall, 14-6. I would have probably put it at 15-5 after 20 games. You know, given that we did have the two games in Vegas, given we did have Texas and everything else. So, you know, given that we're 14-6, I think I'm okay with that. I'm hoping to see something a lot better coming up. I'm hoping to never see another Missouri or even a Penn State. I didn't expect those kind of blowout losses. But, you know, more or less we're aligned with where I kind of thought we'd be after 20 games. But then I thought we would be taking off, and I'm probably a little more cautious on that. Still no goody. Sky Clark is gone. Rotation of 8 guys. Lieb is the 9th guy. You know, I'm pretty cautious, especially given the schedule in February.
Yeah, I'm still not sure after the Indiana game, because I was getting there, that I still trust this group fully yet. And you know, beyond all the things we talked about earlier with Sky Clark and lack of RJ and, you know, some of those things, I don't trust this team shooting. You know, we just don't shoot the ball well enough consistently, I think, to run off an extended stretch of wins like we've had in the previous couple seasons. Now, again, like Underwood wants us to all hear, you know, offense varies, defense wins championships. And yeah, that's fine. I'm good with that. And our defense hasn't been very good, except, you know, with minus the Indiana game for the most part. But I still, the shooting, I mean, last night should have been the Ohio State game. We should have won that game by 25 points.
Yes.
And we won by 9 because we shot 5 of 28 from threes, many of which were wide open looks.
Yep.
Not like, you know, one of my issues, like I think I texted you, was that, you know, our shot chart always looks very good. We have lots of layups and shots at the rim and lots of threes. But oftentimes the quality of those threes is suspect. And last night I didn't think that was the case. I thought we took a lot of good threes, but
yep. Yeah. As you tweeted, like, we've had so many opportunities for dagger threes. You know, where it's, you know, and you could see, you sit there in the arena and watch, you know, people are slowly getting to their feet. Everybody's leaning forward. You know, you're up 17. This is going to be the three to put you up 20. Yep. And, you know, Holtman's going to call another timeout and clanga, clanga, clanga.
Yeah. So I should clarify that because there are layers of daggers in games. Right. Because I got a lot of, I got some blowback on the tweets like, well, Iowa this and Trent that. I'm like, yeah, but to me, there's a dagger that's okay. It's a close game. It's the final minute. You're up two with 40 seconds left, and you hit a three to go up two possessions. That's a game-winning, yes, game-sealing dagger. The dagger I'm talking about is a game like last night where you're hanging out in that 12, 15-point range, still enough that a 6-0 run from them puts them back at single digits, and then you start getting itchy a little bit. And so you the momentum's building, and you got a little run going, and here comes a wide-open three to stretch from, like you said, from 16 to 19 or from 14 to 17, which now that seems unsurmountable. And it just seems like over the years, that's the shot we always miss, followed by a 9-0 run from the opponent.
Yes.
And again, so, and it did have, it did get down to, I think, 9 or 8, maybe, and not 9 at the final, but in the, when the game was still in question, I think Ohio State cut.
It went to, from 17 to 8 very, very quickly. And I tweeted that at the time. Like, this is danger zone time. Like, it's the game where I'm looking at, okay, 13 minutes left, up 17. Yeah, this one's pretty much over. I am constantly, you know, you know my numbers probably by now, but, you know, the Arizona comeback was 15 with like 3:53 left or whatever. So if it's over 15 at the under 4, I'm feeling good. And then the Missouri 3 overtime loss, we were up 9 with a minute to go, and hit most of our free throws, but Missouri hit 5 straight threes, the last one to tie it and send us overtime. And so I am always double digits. You know, I'm even 8 with a minute to go, I'm still a little cautious. And I'm always 15 at the under 4 timeout. If we're 16, 17, 18, game's over. If it's 14, yeah, it's still possible. Everybody hang on. Nobody get lazy here. You know, I feel like I have to be on that wall kind of thing. And last night was that kind of game of like 17 with 12. This, we're even past that. What was it? LSU, Kentucky? What was the 32-point comeback with?
Yeah, I don't know.
Whatever the record is. I think it was 32. It was like 25 years ago or 20 years ago. I think it was a 32-point comeback for Kentucky at LSU. Might have been in 98 when they won the title. Anyway, I always have that, like, if we ever get to a 33-point lead, literally every time we get to 33-point lead exactly, I'm thinking, okay, well, now it's impossible.
Now, we're clear.
Now it's 100% impossible. It's never been done before. No one has ever come back from down this. I can relax now.
It's safe.
And so, but yes, last night was that. 17 to 8, really? Like, we should be dominating this game. And then real quick, it went to 10, 12, and you're like, okay. You know, it went to 12, and we got the ball and put a three in the air that could have put it back to 15. And it would have been like, okay, perfect. You know, and then we missed the three. They come back, score twice, and it's back to 8. And I'm just like, somebody just put this game away so I can, like, release my tension. But that's just me. That's how I watch basketball.
I know how much you like to pace, so I'm guessing that being on press row in those situations is very challenging.
Yes, yes, I'm internally pacing. I'm like, I got to be careful to like start bouncing my knee and shaking the table or something like that. Yes. But yes,
but to acknowledge my text to you before the game, you know, is in my assessment of what that game was going to be, that we did not. You know, Coach Henson always talked about there are two games each season on either side of the win-loss column, two on the win side, positive side, two on the negative side, where the coaching has no bearing whatsoever. It's just there's two games a year where you play like absolute crap and your opponent just puts everything together and you lose by 20, 25. And on the other hand, the same thing happens where you have just everything clicks and the other team has nothing going on. And we've had that happen twice, if not three times, on the negative side, but we hadn't had a positive one in our favor yet. And I was really feeling that after the Indiana game, five days of rest. I thought we were going to come out and roll. For the most part, we did. And, of course, you had your nightmares.
Can we talk about it? Look, just give me 2 minutes to talk about it.
Yeah, roll.
There is no possible way to create a worse. I mean, I tweeted after the game, it was a top three XX. I should probably explain what that is for some people listening don't know what this is. I obsess over the final score of a game. Last night's score was 69-60, which is the nightmare of all nightmare scores. What I am thinking of is when somebody is looking through the scores the next day, I want them to get an accurate representation of what that game was, what happened in that game. 69-60 does not tell the story of last night's game. 72-57, that would tell the story of last night's game. But 69-60 is a horrible representation. Both numbers are in the sixes. So I am constantly wanting us to just get over into the next digit and for the opponent to stay out of, you know, I wanted that to be what I call 7X, 5X. I don't care how we get into the 70s, just get there. I don't care if it's 70-59. 70-59 and 69-60 are 1 point different on either end, yet they feel like two completely different games.
Opposite ends of the spectrum.
Opposite ends of the spectrum. And so we're sitting there last night. We are up 17, I think. I think we were up 17, and they went on an 8-0 run to close it. We missed our last seven shots. We get to 69 points with, like, 5:25 left or something like that and don't score again, don't even get a free throw, nothing else. It might have been four. No, I think it was almost five full minutes of sitting on 69. And so because I always look at scores like this, there is no greater nightmare. So I'm constantly doing the math in my head of like, okay, 110 left. If we drag out this possession, we shoot with 40. That means they get one more shot. They're not going to foul. So even if they hit a three, we'll get the ball, dribble it out. Okay, we're good. We just need them to not score. And so they were at, I think, 55. Sensiball hit a two. We come down. I think we miss, they miss. We come down and dribble out the clock. We got a rebound, right? Yeah, we got a rebound. Resets the shot clock to 20. Offensive rebound with 26 seconds left.
The violation, right?
Yes, and we dribble it out, but since the shot clock resets to 20 and not 30, we just dribble it out and let the shot clock. There's 6 seconds. You see Chris Holtmann immediately yell to Justice Suing saying, get a three up, get a three up. And he does, and he makes it. And he knows the optics. He knows that 69-60 looks okay. And when the committee is looking at Ohio State's losses at some point, only losing by 9 at Illinois looks better than losing by 12. And so he was very thankful that we dribbled out the clock, and he was very thankful to hit that three to make it 69-60. So all I needed was 1 point to have a 7X, 5X, just anything from Illinois. And it ends up a 6X, 6X nightmare of all nightmare scenarios.
69-52 with 4:16 left.
Yes, 69-52. We just have to score one single point in the final. What did you say, 4:15?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. One single point, and they go on an 8-0 run to get into the same. They get to 60-something, and the final score is 60-something to 60-something. I hate it. I hate it.
I love the culture you have started on Twitter with that. How many people know that and instantly start texting their condolences or tweeting their condolences to you in a such and knowing it's such a bad.
Well, I've had that going for 3-4 years now. I've got a new thing now that I'm in people's heads with is I wrote that article about let's get, like, when we only have two players in double digits, we almost always lose.
You want four, right?
Yes, I want four players in double digits. I think we've only lost one game like that all year. You know, this cannot be Shannon gets 27 and Meyer gets 14 and everybody else is in single digits. This has to be, we have to spread it around if we're going to be good. And so I have so many people who tweet me or text me and be like, there it is, the fourth player in double digits. We're going to win, you know, that type
last
of thing.
Last night.
Yes.
Coleman gets a dunk to give to
yes.
get 11.
Yes, that's exactly right. Yes. So I'm just building this whole legion of neurotic Illini fans, and I'm going to make shirts for all of us. Let's get back to the season as a whole. Okay, you just mentioned Coleman, so let's talk about Coleman. It's just interesting. I don't even know how to frame it. Like, there's times when he's so good, you know, like the touch pass last night, you know,
the touch pass and the dribble, head fake, ball fake, guy flies by layup. I mean, that's
yes.
a pro move. Just
yes.
Smooth as silk.
Yes, 100%.
Next time down the, I mean, I shouldn't say next time down the court, because when he's engaged like he was last night, that seems to carry through.
Yes.
But in the Indiana game, he did the classic first 2 minutes of the game. We're already up 4-0 or whatever. He gets a wide open three in the corner, and he pump fakes and ends up in a turnover, and that's in his head the whole game. And he just is a non-factor in the end. He has the unique ability to turn a good shot into a bad opportunity more than any other player. He just makes things more difficult than they have to be. And it's not about showboating. It's not about hot dogging like some people like to think. I think he gets in his head, and I don't know where it goes, but he just shuts down. But when it's there, it's special. I mean,
yeah. Yeah.
Last night was a first round draft pick. Indiana yes. was a guy who plays in Europe. So
yep.
Amazing.
Yes. And you know me with college players, like I'm always all believe until they're, senior day game that a light bulb is going to come on, you know? And so I'm still patient. If that's I'm still because we continue to see the signs of it, like I'm just going to like last year, people were frustrated with Hawkins in what, February. And then the last week, and then even like, we don't beat Chattanooga without him. Like we, you know, he started to come into his own, which built a lot of the hype for this season. And you know, there's this, I don't know, curse for a player that when they show skills like that, like the worst thing that could have happened for Coleman this year is what, 6-for-7 from three in the opener or whatever he was. Yeah. I mean, that's, it's like you're cursing yourself.
Well, that's what Coleman Hawkins is. Of course,
yes.
he's going to have 5 threes a game. That's
yes.
just what he is now.
Right. And so, yes, last night, 98% of all college players, when the oop is off and they're not going to be able to dunk it, their first thought is, can I at least slow this down and try and lay it in? Well, he gets a bad oop pass, and he's thinking, what if this is a touch pass to Ty Rogers for the dunk? You know, so he does some things – some, you know, high IQ basketball things that just are like, okay, we've got a special guy here who can do these things. Like you said, the up and under and the pivot foot and lay it in. And that's the curse, right? Like that's the, once he shows that, people expect that. And people think, okay, Io did these kind of crazy things. So let's see a high level of play like we got from Io, which is unfair to him.
It is unfair. It's just, I think what is so unique about his play this year is that there is no middle ground. We either get 5-star Coleman or we get 1-star Coleman.
Yeah.
And that's the delta is there's just no middle ground with him. He's just an All-American or he's a non-factor.
Yep. It's interesting. Like I saw, I don't know who the NBA scout guy. It wasn't Sam Vecenie. It was somebody else. Maybe the draft. Jonathan. His name's not going to come to me. This is the worst thing to do on a podcast because there are people at home. Like
Vecenie likes. Destiny likes Coleman a lot.
Yes. I'm just saying there are people screaming at home the name that I'm trying to come up with right now, and I can't come up with it. Anyway, it might have been Vesiny, but it might have been somebody else. Like, there have been people.
Givney.
Yes, Givney. Yes. Thank you. Oh, God.
I just thought that.
It might have been him saying, like, I just saw a set of plays from Coleman Hawkins. Like, this could be creeping into the first round kind of stuff of this and that. And I think for Illinois fans, we all think, like, look, we've watched the full body of work, and sometimes that guy disappears. And so, yes, those highlight films, the stuff you're showing is stuff that very few players can do, especially at 6'10". But then, you know, we remember moments where even the coach is like, be more assertive. Like, you know, it's almost like there's times where he, I don't want to say he's too unselfish. He views himself as the point guard, which you want the guy who can make these passes to do. But then at a point, it's like, hey, man, you were open.
Yeah.
Fire that. Like,
and I think that's going to get, I don't want to pretend like I'm trying to get in somebody's head, because, you know, no one really knows what goes is what he's thinking in that moment. But what it appears to me is when I say he gets in his head is well, tonight I need to be the distributor, and that's all I'm going to do. Mm-hmm. It's like at the detriment of the rest of my game, my job is to facilitate the offense. And he gets tunnel vision, and then that's when he starts to, you know, everything starts to struggle, and that's where you see, you know, when I've covered games and you see him pass up shots and you just see the coaching staff put their head in their hands or turn away with just like a look of, you know, what is he, why? And, mm-hmm. and that is the enigma.
Mm-hmm.
But but again, more of what we saw last night, please.
Yes. Just
more.
Yes.
All of that. Cause he is, I love him. I love watching him play when he's just a really dynamic player, and he's a fun guy to watch. He's easy to root for. So yeah, I really need him to want him is the
yes.
better word.
Yes. Yes.
To be there. I want to root for him so bad. So.
Yep. What? Okay. If I were to. Okay. First round tournament game. You get to pick the order of our leading scorers for the type of game you want to see. And now, obviously, it'll depend on opponent and, you know, do they have a big or do they, you know, are they a quick team? Is this a danger game? You know, all that. But ideally, first round of the tournament, you're looking at the box score after an Illini victory, and you are pleased because, let's just say, top six scorers, what is the order you want to see from those six guys? I'm assuming Shannon's going to be number one just because you want your leading scorer to have the big game. But give me your order of those six guys. And yes, Luke Goody is available for this tournament game.
No, I'm going to go Shannon, Meyer, Epps, Coleman in that order.
Okay.
Which is basically what happened last night, I think.
Shannon, Meyer, Epps, Hawkins, and then give me your fifth leading scorer and sixth.
Dane and RJ.
Okay. Do you have hope for Luke Goody to be part of that by mid-March?
You know, not until I see him play. I just, you know, I need to see him move in a situation before I make any assessments of what he can offer the rest of the year.
Got it.
So
got it. And any thought of letting Ty Rogers sneak into that top six?
I think Ty Rogers was what is going to be what we got last night.
Yep.
4 points, 8 rebounds, and the points are on putbacks or dunks or something like that. He's just, you know, his shot's not going to happen this year. And when teams are scouting him, they're going to be able to take his offense. They're going to let him shoot, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
His offense is not going to be a key factor for me. I need 4 points and 8 rebounds from him. That's what I mean.
Yep.
He can dominate a game on the glass.
And sincere, you're looking for defensive energy, but probably not looking for points.
Here's my hot take of the night is I think you're going to see a gradual de-emphasis of Sincere over the next the balance of the season. He's great on defense, but you know those minutes have to go somewhere when Luke comes back, assuming he comes back. And I just think that he's so limited on offense that the
limited on offense as a freshman or limited on offense in perpetuity.
This year alone. I know there's metrics out there that have him, that when he's on the floor, our plus minus is a certain degree, but our offense grinds to a halt when he's on the floor. And because of that, and he's a freshman, I think that he falls into the trap of, oh, I'm open, so I better shoot, as not understanding that I'm open for a reason kind of a thing.
Yeah.
So I do think that this, I mean, how many minutes did he have last night?
I've got it up right here.
7 minutes last night.
Yeah, 7 minutes. He was plus three in those 7 minutes.
I mean, last night was a little different. But again, and I know he was coming off of a little bit of an injury in the from the Indiana game, but he did start obviously, and he wasn't out there, you know, all that much. And I think that's a trend we'll see continue with, you know, there'll be some games where he, you know, the defense, he's got some steals, he's got the crowd going, he's going to play, you know, double digit minutes. But I think on the whole, we'll probably see his minutes decrease, especially when Luke comes back. That's just kind of where I feel things are kind of trending.
So then, I mean, then when Epps is on the bench, who's your primary ball handler?
Shannon.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or Coleman. I mean, depending. If you're on the spread, you don't need a point. I mean, the point guard's job is just to get the ball to the high post, and then that's where the offense kind of runs through. So right. I think Jaden's done a respectable job. I didn't think he'd be much of a creator, but he's been able, and he's not been, you know, a big assist guy, but he's been a capable, at least facilitator of the offense at the stands. He's not going to be a drive and dish kind of player, but that's kind of where I'm at with it. But, you know, I'm comfortable with Epps on the floor. So, sorry, I got distracted. I'm watching Indiana try to lose in Minnesota. They're down one with 44 seconds left. Indiana is.
Wait, Indiana at Minnesota?
And Minnesota's without their best player. Big Ten is
I wish people knew how reliable the Big Ten was in like 1988. Like Northwestern and Wisconsin were bad. They were going to go like 2-16 or, you know, 2-14 if there were 16 games back then. Like, it was just so reliable. You knew who was going to beat who. There were some teams were 500, and Indiana was going to go 15-3, and now it's just like, it's just so weird. Melendez 31 minutes last night. That was interesting to me. Like, you know, not starting, but getting 31 minutes. That's part of it was Dane was in foul trouble. Meyer was in foul trouble, and so there had to be something. Okay, so just so you drop your head, did Indiana do something?
I just saw Minnesota set Indiana to the free throw line with 40 seconds left. Minnesota was up one. Race Thompson makes the first one, misses the second one, but Trace Jackson Davis got the rebound, laid it in.
So Indiana up two?
Indiana up two, and Minnesota just took a three and missed it, and so they're going to lose. So, okay. Oh, well. It was fun while it lasted.
Okay.
The RJ defense was great last night. And then, again, that's where he earns those minutes last night. You know, if Sincere's going to play seven, then RJ's going to play 30. You know, because Sincere was getting 20 minutes a game, and RJ's shot was really broken last night. But he played. I mean, his defense was really good.
Yeah.
And Underwood really wants, you know, it's really encouraging him. I think using that game where even though it got to within eight, you know, it was a situation where he was able to leave him out there and let him try to find his way on the offensive end of the floor. He took a bunch of shots. He was aggressive with the shot, but they're just not falling. And right now it's just not close, unfortunately.
Okay, so where do the threes come from? Like, if we do improve our shooting from the outside, where are the threes coming from?
I'm comfortable when Meyer shoots it, as long as he's not doing a sidestep, one dribble.
Newsflash, he's going to do sidestep, one dribble.
I don't mind it when there's 10 seconds left on the shot clock, but when it's the first, I know Underwood talks about the first 7 seconds, but he talks about the first 7 seconds in an uncontested fashion. So he doesn't want contested threes going up that fast. And so I think that on the whole, Meyer's been better since the Penn State game when he was just firing them away. But I mean, it's just a matter of, I don't care where the threes come from. I mean, we've seen Meyer can make shots. We've seen that Terrence Shannon can make shots. We've seen that Coleman can make shots. If you take, last night was discouraging because a lot of the shots were open. Those shots, if we shoot 5 of 28 with the quality of threes we were getting last night, then we're just a bad shooting team. I think that if we got the same looks on a normal night, we're going to probably shoot 35-40%, which is fine. That's functional. But so I don't think it's a matter of who's going to make them. I just let them come in the flow of the offense as opposed to shooting them contested off the dribble against pressure as opposed to drive the ball, kick it out. Yeah, Indiana's going to win.
Yeah.
But again, if the shots that we get and we shoot like that on Saturday with those quality of shots, we'll lose. But you give me those same 28 shots most nights, I'm comfortable with that.
Yep. Yep. I don't know how to feel about Saturday. I mean, Wisconsin's lost 5 of 6 now or whatever.
They really struggled. Really struggled.
And they lost by 20 at Maryland.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't think I'll ever feel confident going into Cole. But I mean, what are they going to be in the net tomorrow? Like 72 or something like that. Like there's a chance it would be a quad 2 game, a win or a loss.
Even on the road,
They were close to. Let me see what they were. They were close to. When you lose by 20 in the net, like you'll probably drop like 7 spots tomorrow. Let me see what they were today. Scrolling down, which is weird. Scrolling. They were 65 today.
65.
So if they drop to 76 or lower, then that's a road quad 2. They'd have to be top 75.
That would be unlucky, I think.
What's that?
And that would be unlikely unless they just tank completely, right?
Yes, but I mean, this is a team that was ranked. What were they ranked last time we played them? 14th,
15th. But at that point, what was their net ranking when we played them? I don't.
Yeah, it hasn't been that good all year, but still, for a team that was ranked for a good bit of this year, for them to be now looking, what are they, 12-7? Yeah, that's I don't know. Maybe I should be. Yeah, I mean, like right now, Michigan's 77.
Wow.
Let's see. Is that quad? What is home? You have to be top 75 to get a quad 2. I'm gonna look up what that number is. Just think of Michigan at home as a quad 3 game. That would be. That'd be stupid, insane. Okay.
I didn't realize.
Sorry, say that again.
I said I didn't realize that Michigan, had
fallen that
poor
far.
Resume. Nothing fallen that far. I knew they were having it, but I didn't realize that their resume was so poor.
Yep. Yeah, quad 2 has to be 31-75. So, as of right now, the Michigan home game would be a quad 3 game.
Good lord.
Yeah.
That's incredible. They have. The preseason first team All Big Ten and a lottery pick on their roster, and so that's really.
Yep, insane. It would be down there with the basically it'd be the Syracuse game, Syracuse and Michigan would be our two quad three home games. Now, again, they might move up and we might move whatever. And, you know, I even wrote about it in this article or, you know, in the even the tweet I was putting together today. Sure, we've got 3-3 right now, three quad one wins, three quad two wins, but it could all change tomorrow. Or Nebraska goes on a run and suddenly they're 74, and that means our win at Nebraska was a quad one win, you know. So this would change.
Nebraska got blown out by Northwestern tonight. So
Nebraska is not going to move up to 75.
Props to Northwestern for completely torpedoing Wisconsin this week, though. Their rescheduling of the Wisconsin game forced mm-hmm. the Badgers into three games in 6 days this week, you know, and including a game on the road tonight. So they're going to be flying back from D.C. tonight, 1.5 days of prep for our game. So, but again, the conference is drunk. I mean, the conference is drunk. Indiana, by all accounts, should have lost to a terrible Minnesota team tonight. And so we've shown, just as everyone in the conference has shown outside of Purdue, that we can lose to anybody on a given night and we can beat anybody on a given night. So, yep. You know, did we beat Wisconsin? Yes. But should we have beaten Northwestern? Yes. Should we have beaten Penn State? Yes.
Yep. I don't even know what to do with Iowa. Like, you know, I mean, Iowa, it's not just Big Ten. They lose to Eastern at home, yet they have four quad one wins right now. So, yeah, it's all crazy. Okay, so readjusting, if you're looking at this season, you know, I've got the schedule open here, and I'll just read what we have left. So yep. at Wisconsin, home Nebraska, at Iowa, home Minnesota, Rutgers home, and then we've talked about this before the season, you finish with 4 of 6 on the road. So you go at Penn State, at Indiana, home Northwestern, at Ohio State, home Michigan, at Purdue. 5-4 in the conference right now. Are you feeling, I mean, I know you're probably not feeling the, what did you predict? 15-5?
15-5, yeah.
Okay. So I don't want to put words in your mouth. I don't think you think we're going to go, you know, only have one more loss on this schedule. But given the 5-4 start, kind of where do you land by the end of the year?
Yeah, I just don't trust us enough to say that. And to see us anywhere north of 12-8. So what's that? That's going 7-4 the rest of the way.
Yeah. So who would be your four losses if you got us to 12-8? Who? I'm assuming at Purdue is one of them.
At Purdue, at Rutgers, at Penn State.
Oh, Rutgers is home, I think. Right? Yeah, Rutgers.
Sorry. Yes. So yes. Never mind. So look at the away games. Wisconsin, Iowa, Penn State, Indiana, Ohio State, Purdue. So, again, you lose four of those. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Yeah. Wins at Wisconsin, win at Ohio State.
Okay.
Losses at Iowa, Penn State, Indiana, Purdue.
Okay. Yeah, it's kind of funny that the home games left, Nebraska, Minnesota, so probably the two teams that finished 13th and 14th, like yeah. most likely the two teams that finished 13th and 14th. Rutgers will be tough, but then Northwestern, Michigan. Yeah. So yeah, home.
That's
wise,
a favorable home. Yeah, that's yes. a favorable home schedule.
Yeah,
and you know the likelihood of the way I described it is of actually happening is pretty minimal. I mean, the more likelihood is that it, greater likelihood is that we steal a couple road games that we didn't think we win, and we barf up a loss at home against Michigan or somebody. You know, or Rutgers is certainly a 50-50 game kind of thing. But I'm going 12-8 right now based on that.
Okay.
And that I think because of how many more quad one wins would that be? Iowa would be one. Wisconsin was quad two.
Rutgers would be one.
Rutgers would be one. Ohio State would probably be one.
Ohio State would definitely be a quad one. Like, they'd have to fall all the way to 75 to fall out of quad one.
So that's going to give us, so we'll end the year with four or five quad one wins. No bad losses. That's probably a six seed. That's kind of just back of the napkin math, which I'm fine with at this point. That six to me is the same as a three. I mean, college basketball is drunk as well. I mean, there's no dominant team. And is there really that much difference between a six and a three this year? Probably not.
Yep. Okay. So if we, I get a lot of responses of people that are saying to me that, like, we're okay. You know, there's this thought out there. Maybe we're upside down this year. 2 years where we're dominating in the Big Ten and then we flop in the tournament. Maybe we flop in the Big Ten and dominate in the tournament.
That's the age-old question. What would you rather do? Would you rather have a Big Ten championship regular season and a flame out in the NCAA tournament, or backdoor your way to an Elite Eight from a seven seed or a six seed?
Right.
And the range of responses when you throw it out there is
all over. Yes.
It's just crazy.
So the question is, what does that team look like? So if this team were to get on a roll in the tournament, is it, oh my God, Terrence Shannon turned into Kemba Walker and just carried us? Is it, oh, they put the whole thing together? Is it, man, remember when RJ, it just clicked? You know, is it... You know, is it, well, the three transfers became the three dominant, like, it just, you know, the upperclassmen did the upperclassmen thing in the tournament. Like, what do you think a good Illinois tournament team looks like?
I think it starts with Coleman. I think a consistent Coleman is key. I mean, my impression is, you know, Coleman, we go as Coleman goes. You know, Terrence has been there most nights. And that we've won with him, we've lost with him, scoring 20, 25 points. Meyer's been pretty consistent. He's kind of a settled into a 14, 17 point guy in the conference. And so you're counting on those points, then where has the delta been? It's been Coleman, and it's been our shooting. So we're going to have to clean up the shooting. And on a night, if we do go on a run, if we have a night where we're not shooting well, then you have to win that game on defense, like you did against Chattanooga last year.
Yeah.
Right. And then a continued evolution of Jaden Epps settling in and probably a more evolution of Ty Rogers. I mean, we get more of what we saw from him last night, but really it's you stabilize your 3-point shooting, your 2-point defense, which has been solid, minus the Trace Jackson Davis game that he had. It'd be fascinating to see how he defend him in Bloomington in a few weeks. So with the exception of that, if we, you know, we keep forcing teams into 37 2-point jumpers, like you're on.
Yeah.
That's a formula to win. And we're a tough team to play against. And we still, even though we stopped switching, you know, we throw out of that. The athletes that we have on defense make it really hard for teams to get points in the paint and shoot comfortable threes, because we have the length to defend the rim and we have the length to close out to the arc. And that's why I think, you know, Underwood caught a lot of flack for the 35 from Trace TJ doesn't bother me. I think probably what he if he had that back, he'd say that I would take him taking those shots again, meaning that we could play that same game and he may not go what he shoot, you know, 13 or 15, whatever it was. You were there. I forget what he shot, but playing if he played the same way, would he still be that good? He just have a really, really special night. Was it more that, you know, we just let him have his way? So, but that's still an outlier to me. So, Our defense is good enough to make to be a solid NCAA tournament team, and so I keep just coming back to the shooting. You know, if we go 5-20, probably go home.
Yeah, yeah. Are you surprised at all by our? Yeah, I wrote about the block percentage that we're first in the Big Ten and 16th nationally right now. In, you know, what is block percentage? Is percentage of possessions that there's a block shot, I believe.
Yeah,
and we're right now at don't remember. 14.8. Like, are you surprised? Like, I'm trying to think back on Illinois basketball seasons. Like, we've never been a team that gets a ton of blocks. Like,
I'm surprised that Matt Myers.
Yeah.
Block. Penchant for blocks. He's been way better at that than I anticipated.
Yeah.
But Coleman Hawkins has been a good shot, has had a good shot blocking vibe or feel for the game since he was a freshman even. Dane James was a good shot blocker. Terrence Shannon Jr. gets a lot of closeout. You know, his man gets by him, but he closes back and gets the backdoor block, chase down blocks. And so we knew that length was a strength of this defense. With the exception of Meyer, I thought we'd be a better shot blocking team because Kofi, for as much as he was size wise, he wasn't a very good rim protector. He wasn't a great shot blocker. So you figured that the way we were going to play defense was going to lead itself to more shot blocks. I guess I never even really thought about, wow, we're going to block a lot of shots. But if you then dug deeper, like, well, yeah, we have a ton of length, so we probably should block a lot of shots.
Yeah. I mean, like, I'm trying to think. I mean, we used to be horrific. Like, we used to never block. I remember having this conversation. I can probably sort by year in KenPom, right? Let me see here if I can get. Let me go back to some.
While you're doing that, the problem is that I think our defensive rebounding has suffered because sometimes those blocks turn into offensive rebounds. You know, you block a shot, but you left your position, and the guy you left gets the easy carom off the glass and lays it in. That's happened. Often this year.
When did Egwu graduate?
What's our defensive rebounding rate? 27%. That's got to be one of the worst we've had under Underwood.
Yeah. When did Nana Egwu graduate? Do you remember?
14, 15.
I remember like the year after he left.
15.
He was done in 15. Okay, so let me go to 16. KenPom,
our block percentage with Nana as a senior was 8.8, 103rd in the country.
There we go. In 2016, after Egwu left, we were 333rd in the country.
who was our center then? LeRon?
Mike Thorne that year, right? Or is that the year Thorne got injured? That was the year Thorne got injured and he came back in 17.
Oh, Mav Morgan was our center.
Yes. 5.2. We got a block on 5.2% of all defensive possessions. Down there, stuck in between Morgan State, Toledo, Dartmouth, Drake, and Elon. Yes. So, yes. I mean, I used to remember, like, we'd play a game and an opponent would get four blocks, and it would be like, I don't know if we'll get four blocks this month. Like, you know, it's just so bad. So it's kind of nice to be that team. It's kind of fun to be like, excuse me.
Yeah, you talk about optics. You're right. It's teams that block a lot of shots are kind of fun to watch.
Yes.
What an athletic. You always want to be, you know, if you're going to be a middle of the road team or a 6-seed kind of team, you want to be a team full of athletes.
Yes.
That's just kind of.
And look, I mean, we talked about it with Houston last year, right? Like, you know, we talked about Houston's number one right now in blocks. You know, Samson has just he just went after athletes. We've talked about Underwood's offseason of being like, I want to look like that team. Like,
which is why the Indiana game was so baffling, because all we talked about was patterning after Houston. And what Houston does is, with their athletes, they hard double the post.
Yes.
Because they know that even on kickouts, they're still going to have the athletes to get back to the arc fast enough, and quick enough, and close out to defend the three. So that's why the Indiana defense against TJD was so baffling to me, because that's exactly what he said he was going to do. And then because on some aspects, we know Underwood's been willing to change the job of hires, offense or defense, whether it's off season or in the middle of the season, but in over the course of the game, and I think he's really settled into this. I am going to die on the hill. We're going to allow 2-point jumpers until the cows come home, because he's that's what the numbers tell him, that the way you win on defense in basketball in this era is you allow twos and you prevent threes. And so even if in a game like that, you're like, you know what? Tonight, Trace Jackson Davis beat us, but let's see if that happens again. But then you know, again, we did double Sted Key last night. So yeah. Really yeah. Fascinating.
Yeah.
Or at least we dug a little bit on him. We didn't maybe go hard double, but we did dig down and make him pick up his dribble a bunch. So
yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I'll just present, this is my final question for you this evening.
Yeah.
Two scenarios. I'll give you three scenarios. And if I give you three, you're just going to pick the middle one. I'll give you two scenarios.
Give me two.
Your two scenarios are this team either by making a run and getting up to a four seed and winning the 4-5 game and getting to the Sweet 16, or they're a seven, they knock off the two, they get to the Sweet 16. You have that scenario where this is a second weekend team. You have another scenario where it goes south, 9-11 in the Big Ten. We're on the bubble. we're either just in a play-in game or we're in the NIT. Which of those two scenarios seems more likely to you?
More likely is the first scenario. For the struggles, you know, yes, we lost to Northwestern. And yeah, Indiana was abysmal. But, you know, this is a team that's won four or five games, or five or six games, right? So we're still trending upward. And again, we still kind of just feel like we're riding the razor's edge every single night. But I think it's far more likely that we go on a little bit of a run than the thing falls off a cliff. I don't see anything that worries me to the point where I think we're trending in the wrong direction. I think there'll be nights where we don't shoot well and we lose, but on the whole, I think this is moving in the way to your scenario A. But so now, yeah, I got to ask you, what was your third scenario going to be?
Well, I was going to present, we go on a run and get like a three seed, you know, that like this takes off from here and we finish like 14-6 in the Big Ten again. We only lose two more games, and we're, you know, we get to the, we make a run in the tournament based on we really put things together. Then I was going to do the middle scenario of, okay, we do go 11-9 in the Big Ten. We're a seven seed based on the strength of the Texas UCLA wins. But from there, we do put together a run, or it goes south and we're flirting with the NIT.
It's such an interesting question, because really we're at the point now exactly where we were in the previous two seasons. And if you'd asked me in 2021 or 2022 that same question, when we sat at 14-5, which we were in 2021, and again in 2022 last year, we were 14-5. Now we're 14-6. If you asked me those same questions, I said, no, I don't trust us. I think we're still going to be kind of, you know, at this point, 20 games in, you kind of are what you are. We're gonna have some games where we show up and some games we don't. We're probably going to middle of the road all the way to the end of the year. But both of those seasons, we rattled off 8 of 9, 9 of 10, and ended up, you know, finishing one with a one seed and two with a Big Ten championship. So it's the parallels between the last two seasons, at least record-wise, even though our these teams are completely different, is shockingly similar.
Yeah, you're right. I hadn't even thought about that, but like, yeah. So through 20 games, in 2020, we were 15-5. In 2021, we were 15-5. In 2022, we were 15-5.
Yeah.
In 2023, we're 14-6.
Yeah. So we're as much teeth gnashing has been done by our fan base, I think because of the nature of the losses and because they've come against rivals. You get blown out by Missouri, you get blown out by Indiana, and then you had the Penn State game with all the post-game drama. So the nature of the losses have been angst-producing for the fan base. But from the 30,000-foot view, we're pretty much where we have been the last three seasons. So
I hadn't even thought of that. Has that been put out there? Did you read that somewhere, or are you just landing on that?
No, I was just looking at the schedule going 14. We're looking back, and I'm like, oh, 14.
My wheels are spinning with, like, articles and, like, Like, that needs to be, you need to tweet that, right? You need to tweet that right now. Since you landed on this, you need to tweet that, and I'll put it up there.
The time to tweet it would have been two games ago, because that would have been the fourth consecutive year where we were 13-5.
After 18 games.
After 18, we've been 13-5 the last four seasons.
Yes. The one tiny asterisk is there were only like eight or seven non-conference games in the COVID year in 2021.
Yeah.
And so we got to that pretty deep into the Big Ten season, which is harder to do.
Yeah, we were 13-5 in 2020. We were 13-5 in 2021. We were 13-5 in 2022. And we were 13-5 in 2023. How about that? That is a crazy stat.
Wow. Wow. Okay. So, well, I'm going to be thinking about that for the next hour.
Is the trend your friend? Will the Underwood February drive come through again, or is this the year we do come back to earth and revert to the mean?
My first thought there is 2020, where we lost our first four games in February. I just had this thought of, you know, that was the year we won like what, eight in a row or whatever, and then lost four in a row.
Yep.
And then
and won four in a row.
Yes. And then Io came back for the
Penn State
game, and we went back on our run. But yes. February, the last few years, let's see, 2021, we went 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 1 in February.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, we went 1, 2, 3, 4, uh-huh. 5, 5, and 3 in February.
Oh, that was good, yeah.
Yeah, but the three were the, I guess the Ohio State one was the only rough one. So, yes. It will be interesting. That's crazy. 15-5, 15-5, 15-5, 14-6.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
I don't know if it's more amazing that the preseason struggles have been so consistent, or that the Big Ten turnaround has been so consistent.
I mean, he's talked about it before. Like, he's like, I don't know why my teams lose early, but they just do. Like, I don't know, like maybe I push them too hard in the offseason.
Everyone said that was going to happen this year. New team, transfers, you know, it's going to take time for the team. That's what every single national and local writer kind of said.
Yep.
But it's weird because it's not just us that has new team. I mean, there are many examples of teams who rebuilt on the fly, like Iowa State. They have an entirely new team, and they're just kicking tail right now. Yep. And there's other teams like, I don't know, say like – Kentucky, or Duke, who've struggled like we have, it'll be weird to see how coaches. I think you'll see coaches evolve, and that you'll find that some coaches really, really adapt to molding teams on the fly, and some just, you know what, this is not working for us. That's the Matt Painter. I'm not doing that. I'm just going to keep. I'm going to maybe add a into the bench transfer, but I'm still going to build my program the old fashioned way. And you'll have. You know, who embrace it, just keep rolling new guys in.
Yep.
This be a fascinating development.
Yep.
Yeah, really think about.
Okay. Well, I think we've solved everything we can for tonight. So.
Yeah.
I don't know. Onward and upward. Go tweet that stat right now. That needs to be.
I will think right away to put that out into the basketball world.
All right. Thanks for doing this. We'll talk soon.
Yeah, my pleasure. We'll talk soon.
All right. Go on.